Eric Weddle's a machine. Grind it day in, day out. I'm not gonna miss. He's such a creature habit. I could set my watch most days to his workout time. I mean, we see Joe do the running last year in the off-season program and competing and beating guys in races who I won't name because they would probably kill me.
The people have spoken, even when family members are telling me I took the L, that it's bad. Welcome into the lounge. Garrett, we're going to take a little break, a little hiatus from all the draft talk. You know, we've done a lot of it, and there's a lot to come.
Yes.
Trust me, because we're still working on that big-haired guy from ESPN. We're trying to, trying to land Mel Kiper Jr. We'll see if it happens.
We also have a strong line on getting Daniel Jeremiah on the podcast, who is one of the best draft analysts out there, former Raven scout.
Well, now you're just clowning on Kiper to try to get him to come on.
Yeah, you know, we can maybe have the two of them on here, have a little competition, who's the best draft analyst out there, try to set the record straight.
Hold his feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Put some pressure on Kiper.
Keep the pressures on.
But anyway, we're going to get away from some of the draft talk and talk to Steve Saunders, Ravens head strength and conditioning coach, with the program beginning Monday. It's a good time for that.
Absolutely. And before we get into the interview with Steve, lots of emails have come in. A lot of emails have come in since our most recent podcast with the serial draft. And let me just go ahead and tease. It's not pretty from our boy Mink here.
Yeah, we're just going to skip over that part.
It's ugly. And so we're going to get to a number of those emails after the interview with Steve. But with no further ado.
A number of those emails?
A number of them. And that's not even scratching the surface. I mean, Jesus. We can do a full podcast on all these emails. But anyway, we'll get to that. For now, let's go ahead and welcome in the head strength and conditioning coach, Steve Saunders.
We are happy to be joined by Steve Saunders, the Ravens' head strength and conditioning coach, and a guy who has a little more muscle than either of us.
Just a little bit.
Combined.
Yeah, just a little bit.
First question off the bat, though, just eyeball test. Who do you think puts up more weight between me and Garrett?
That should be an easy. Let
me ask
that
again.
You know, who puts up more weight?
I think we should test both of you for supplements and do bench press max and just settle it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He has longer arms, though. So
it's true. That's against him, right?
It's definitely against him.
Right. But I have small, tiny, little weak arms. So that's against me.
I was speaking length, but it's all relative.
The real question is, when's the last time? Does Mink even know how to get down to the weight room anymore? Since he had a kid, he's basically mailed it in. I don't know. If he had to go find his way to the weight room right now, I'm not convinced you could do it.
I would say I have an excuse with dad bod, but don't you have like 5 kids?
I have 5, but I will say it gets tougher.
See, there you go. I'm off the hook.
The days of bench pressing at 6 p.m. are long over for me. I've got other stuff to do.
Working out for me, Steve, and you got to talk me out of this, all right? I'm a guy, and this is the answer I always give everybody, including my boss, who tells me I should hit the weight room more, is that I like to compete. Right, and I have a tough time self-motivating myself in the gym to make it a competition. You know, I like to play basketball. I like to play football.
I like
to play those things, and it's tough. What do you say to people like me?
You got to find a workout partner,
okay,
or a coach.
Garrett, here we go.
So I think once you cross into the world of having kids, I think you got to do it in the morning because it's easy. Something's always going to come up, and people procrastinate. They'll put it off.
Right.
I'll lift this afternoon. I'll lift tonight. Once you have kids and a family, there's always something that comes up.
Right.
So for me, I've just found with each additional kid, I'm getting up 15 to 20 minutes earlier where I'm at 4 a.m. now. I get up every day, so I try and get 6 hours sleep. It's like 10 to 4. I'm at 4 a.m. now. Thank God we're done having kids, or I'd be at like 3:30, 3:45.
At some point, this has to stop.
Yeah. It has to, absolutely.
Great. Well, the Ravens are kicking off the strength and conditioning program Monday. So just how jacked up are you about it this year?
I can't wait. I mean, it's my favorite time of year. I mean, it's the first 3 weeks. They're just with my staff and myself, and we get to run them as hard as we want to. We get to lift them as hard as we want to, and they don't really have a whole lot else to do except complain about us and hopefully do what we ask them to. So it really, for us, it's the best time of year.
You know, last year was the first year that you headed up the entire program and you took it in the direction that where it is now. You kind of led it in a new direction. And you talked last year at the start of it how there was going to be a lot of guys who were a little angry, you know, a little upset with you, some sore puppies out there, and guys talked about that. How did that go? How did that transition go in terms of leading it in that direction?
It was great. I mean, I had great buy-in from the players. I mean, as long as I've been doing this, those guys are so competitive. They care about one thing, and that's getting results. So I don't care what you do to them. I think if you can show them results, quantify them, and they can see them and feel them on the field. And one of the things I've always said is confidence is the key to all locks. So not only are we getting them stronger and faster physically, but that gives those guys a mental edge on the field, a little more swagger, whatever you want to call it, and that goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. You talked about guys potentially keying your car last year, I remember. Did your car get keyed?
It did not.
It did not.
It did not. So okay. I'm in good shape there. I don't know if they know what I drive necessarily, but it's right. Still intact.
Yeah, Steve's car is actually, he parks down the block. It's a shuttle in every single morning.
During the strength conditioning. First couple days at least.
At the hour I get here in the morning, there's no players here, so they may not be sure what I'm driving, which is good.
I remember you also said you were like, you know, nobody's going to be hiding on like the leg press anymore. You know, nobody's going to be hiding from me. Was that the case? Like, were there some guys who weren't used to going through such a strenuous program in past years who last year it was a big wake-up call?
They definitely were, but we have such great leadership on the Ravens. I mean, right. You know, for, you know, the Eric Weddles of the world, the Joe Flaccos of our world, and then to get a guy like Suggs to buy into the program and attend for the first time in 12, 13 years, whatever it was. I mean, when you see those guys over 30 giving it everything they got every day, it's hard for a younger guy not to. Right. So even if they thought, well, hopefully it's not as hard as I think it's going to be, when those guys show up and do it, they have to. Yeah. And that's one of the great things about peer pressure in a positive way. You know, you get those vets doing it, and everybody has to follow suit.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to having a workout buddy. You know, I'm curious.
Yes.
A lot of times people ask what's different about the program. And last year there was all this talk about how it's more challenging and strenuous. But I think a lot of people look at it like, how can it be? These guys are already working really hard. How can it be any more challenging? So what would you say is different about the direction that you've taken the program?
Yeah, they definitely always did work hard. Right. But I feel like there's working hard and there's working smart. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we do now is trying to get, you know, the whole body, you know, try and get some of those muscle imbalances away. So we're really working on upper back and rhomboid strength as well as just press strength, because we want those shoulders more stable. We want the chest stronger, the back is stronger. We're doing more hamstring work for the guys. We're doing more hip flexor work for the guys. And primarily we're doing stuff that's going to transfer out to the field and just not lifting for the sake of lifting. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the running. We're not doing aerobic work because the football's not an aerobic sport. We're doing speed work, we're doing conditioning that's football specific, and it's just working smarter, and the guys want to know why. And the great thing is that explaining the why and educating them, they'll buy in even more. It's been fantastic.
If you were to go in the weight room three years ago, it looks completely different from what it looks like now. What was that transition process? You basically had a bunch of machines that you said, get these out of here. That's just totally changed the look and feel of this place.
Yeah, it really wasn't so much just the look and the feel. It's just so much the philosophy. I'm not a machine guy. Okay. I want the guys strong with their body weight. I want the guys using, you know, bands, using weights, using barbells. And the old philosophy, they used a lot of machines, which isolate, but on the field there's not really movements in isolation. The guys are moving, they're in awkward positions, they got to plant, they got to change direction. So it's just, there was nothing wrong with the weight room how it used to be. It's just a different philosophy from what I use with the guys.
And how would you say that your philosophy or your program differs from not just what was here previously, but even from what you're familiar with around the league?
Yeah, I think it's different because we really try and get the guys into small manageable groups and coach them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the programs that are out there, you know, the guys will just sort of wander around the weight room and cheer the guys on and maybe help a guy or two. But for our guys with our coaches, we're looking to coach every rep that they do, every set that they do, and really be hands-on. Again, they're not just lifting to lift. We're trying to cue it and trying to get them to do it correctly and feel it where they're supposed to feel it.
Right. You brought up Terrell Suggs, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. What was the process last year in convincing him to come to the workouts for the first time in 13 years? And then the process that where you saw it transfer to the field, how much of a difference do you feel like it made?
Yeah, I mean, for him, it was, you know, be careful what I say here. It was.
We're all careful what we say.
For him, quite honestly, it was, please show up and I won't kill you.
And that's what you said to him, right?
And it was said in jest, but it was serious. And I had a background with it of, I've trained older NFL players already and helped them extend their career. Mm-hmm. And my point to him was, look, I'm not, you're not just going to show up and I'm going to grind you. I want to help you get better. I want to help you play better next year and feel like you felt 4 or 5 years ago. And we already knew each other from me being here and working with the guys the previous year. So, you know, to his credit, he showed up. I was true to my word. I didn't kill him. And once he could feel the change, see the change, I mean, he's all about it now. I mean, I think he's, I don't know where he ends up. I think he has some structural damage from stuff over the years of just being an older player, but he's still a puppy in the weight room. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, I still think even at his age, he has a lot of ramp.
Right.
He's going to be stronger, faster next year than he was this year. And again, he's working around stuff that's accumulated for the past 12, 13 years. So, you know, it's not like we have this clay we can just mold. You got to work around that stuff. But yeah, he's still got a lot of ramp ahead of him, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Another big part of any offseason program is preparing guys to withstand kind of the rigors of the season to hopefully avoid injuries. Obviously, last year, it really started early where this team was kind of snake bitten with some stuff early in the process where you have guys like Tavon Young go down in mini camp and then it goes through, you know, extends through training camp. How does the injury component sort of work into all of this in terms of trying to prevent them? You know, how do you try to prevent these?
I don't know. I never look at anything as trying to prevent it. I look at trying to make these guys ready for anything that can happen to them. But by nature of the sport, football's a freak sport. Right. You know, these guys aren't playing pickleball. You know, some stuff's going to happen. I mean, you're going to an ACL, you know, you could have had a slight tear there you didn't know about. We don't put these guys through a total body MRI. Guys could be walking around with stuff now that we just don't know about until during the season, until after the season, and that's just the nature of it. So I was really proud of last offseason that, okay, we had, you know, Dennis's hip. We had a couple things that were, I would consider, freak injuries. As far as soft tissue nuisance injuries, we didn't have one until the very last week before the guys left. And it was at the tight end position, I believe, and somebody taking extra reps because Dennis wasn't there.
Yeah.
And the reps must go on. So I really thought last offseason was fantastic for us. Those freak things, I mean, every time I watch practice, I'm praying nothing happens because guys fall, they roll, you know, and you just never know.
Right.
When there's a bunch of guys that end up, do you on IR and you see some of those freak things that happen, does that change at all when you, like, how you go about things? Or do you just say, I mean, some of these things you can't, I mean, using Dennis as an example, that's obviously something that it's not, you weren't going to be in a position to prevent that. And it seems like the same thing with an ACL. When you're going through the process, do you say, all right, we need to do something different to try to prevent some of these freak things, or can you not control that?
No, I don't think you can control the freak things. I mean, somebody rolling into Herb,
right?
You know, and getting Liz Frank, something like that, you can't do it. I think it's, and some of the guys who have been playing that get age injuries, that have an Achilles or a shoulder, that, hey, maybe they could have gotten it fixed 2 years ago and they kept on playing regardless, even though it was there to some degree. I think with those guys, you just try and say, okay, first of all, could we be doing anything better? And I think that's an assessment whether somebody's getting hurt or not, is if you want to be really good at something, you got to throw stones at it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just sit back and say, ah, we got the perfect program, because there is no perfect program. So we try and throw stones at what we're doing the whole time. Hey, can we tweak it, make it better? But I don't let really that be a factor, because the freak stuff, I don't think there's a common bond there.
Can you talk a little bit also about the recovery process? Because that's a huge component of your job as well. And I see there's like tables down by the basketball courts. We had a 3-on-3 basketball tournament, and trust me, between games, I was hitting those tables.
they're the bomb.
They're awesome. That, yeah. So can you shed a little light on that, on what the process is for player recovery?
Yeah, I mean, the player recovery, it's, you know, so much falls on the players. You know, so what they're eating, what supplements they're taking, how much sleep they're getting at night. Or they turn their cell phone off at a reasonable hour? Are they not watching SportsCenter at 2 a.m.? Are they doing, you know, soft tissue work? Are they getting massages? Like, what else are they doing even outside of the building? You know, dry needling, whatever it is. So you try and educate them. I think each guy sort of finds their thing that they like, and they'll try some new stuff. But, you know, we only have them here so many hours in the building, so... You know, same thing with diet. You know, you get a guy who has a weight problem, you wish you could follow him around all day and knock the food out of his mouth. I certainly wish somebody would do that to me at night.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so it's, you know, we all have the same thing. All you can do is educate him, reinforce it, and just let them know how important that recovery piece is.
Right. What is the cell phone thing? You say turn off your cell phone at a reasonable hour?
You would hope so. I think the bane of a player's existence right now is just the video games. I mean, Fortnite and this PUBG.
Staying all their time. They're not sleeping.
My sons, it's literally, I treat them like crack addicts with those video games. I'm like, you guys got to go off of here. You know, we have fights like they had serious issues just about playing Fortnite online. And you know what? It's funny. The guy's got the same thing. I hear the guys talk in the off season. You hear a guy talking about being up till 3-4 in the morning playing video games.
Oh, boy.
And that's okay now, but at some point, especially during the season, hey, you got to shut that stuff off and get some sleep because you got to go to work tomorrow.
You feel like you're a father outside the job and inside the job.
For sure. It's just funny, you know, my kids that are doing it, you know, the boys are 12 and 14, and I hear 24-year-old to 34-year-olds talking about playing the same game.
You're like, it doesn't matter.
Playing against each other online.
Yes, and the same problems. They're like, oh, yeah, give your kids my name. They can play them. Like, oh, my gosh.
That's hilarious.
So we always like to find out who some of the biggest beasts are in the weight room. All right, so we're going to lean on you for that. So what would you say? Who are some of the guys that you think are just, they blow you away when they get into that weight
room? Like with their athletic ability.
Yeah.
Athletic ability or strength or
we can go through every category.
Well, we'll say strength at first.
Work ethic wise, Eric Weddle's a machine. Mm-hmm. I mean, so grind it day in, day out. I'm not going to miss. He's such a creature of habit. I could set my watch most days to his workout time.
Right.
Because he does. He has his schedule of how many hours before the meeting he's coming in, what he's doing. And he's probably the most disciplined guy I've ever been around, as far as habits go. And then I have guys who I think, one guy that comes to mind is Jimmy Smith. Mm. I mean, Jimmy Smith is a 205-to-10-pound defensive back. I've seen Jimmy Smith, I had 365 on the bar for one of the linemen. Jimmy's doing something completely different. Sits down at the bench. I think he's just screwing around, pretending like he's going to lift it. All of a sudden, he bangs out 8 reps at 365.
Whoa.
Cold.
Wow.
As I'm screaming at him to stop before something bad happens on the bar. But it's one of those things you're just like, wow. I mean, I knew he was strong. I didn't expect basically walking off the street and press 365 for 8 times.
Right.
So that's really impressive for a 205-pound guy. I mean, you know, the Mike Pierces, the Brandon Williams, like, mm-hmm. those guys are intimidating just to make eye contact with. So you expect them to be strong, and they don't disappoint. They certainly are.
Right. Well, that was one of my questions I had here. You can settle the debate. Who's stronger, Brandon Williams or Michael Pierce? You know, when we ask them this, who they're voting for.
Yeah, so well, they'll each vote for themselves.
Right. We got to go impartial judge.
I'll say it depends on what.
That's the old splitting it down the middle. I'm familiar with that play right there.
In general, I would give the nod to Brandon. He's got a couple more years under his belt.
Okay.
I would give the nod to Brandon probably on that one.
So depending on what you mean, like legs versus like different exercises?
Yeah. I mean, if it's a press, is it a leg exercise? Is it a low back exercise? I mean, both of them are just freaks. You know,
right.
Most people would be blown away by what those guys can actually do. So they're both good at the same things, but then different things. You know, it'd be neck and neck for most stuff.
And who's one guy that a fan wouldn't look at and say, oh, they're a beast or they're really strong? Like somebody that would surprise you who is really good in the weight room.
I mean, I'd certainly say Jimmy Smith, mm-hmm. who we just talked about, would fall in that court. I mean, I think a guy who would be really strong, if I let him be really strong, is Joe. Mm. I mean, we see Joe do the running last year in the off-season program and competing and beating guys in races who I won't name because they would probably kill me if I let out that our 6'7" quarterback beat them and some stuff. Like, Joe's a really strong athletic guy, and you wouldn't look at him and say, all right, that's a good weight room guy.
Right.
Yeah, but he really is.
Interesting. Yeah. But you just don't let him because you don't want a quarterback, like, maxing out on that.
For sure. I mean,
right.
Again, if I saw Joe get underneath that same 365-pound bar that Jimmy did, I would dive on Joe before I would let him press it.
Maybe that's what he did when he hurt his back last year, Steve.
I don't know. That was not on my watch.
Exactly. So. That's what I'm saying. You need to go up to New Jersey this year, Steve, during the offseason and say, Joe, I'm watching you 24/7. Yeah.
But he's a really strong guy. He really is.
What do you think, just on that side note, like when Joe says, oh, I hurt my back lifting in the offseason away from the Ravens care, are you like, Jesus, you shaking your head? What do you do to try to prevent that stuff?
Well, you know what? I mean, I would love everybody here every day, right, all year long. So that's a given. But, you know, I've also been on the outside world. So these guys come, they want to live, they want a vacation, they want to go somewhere else. And I also know from doing this long, sometimes stuff just happens.
Right.
And it wasn't, maybe he was doing something wrong, maybe he wasn't, but it just happens. I would rather have something happen by pushing yourself than somebody just going through the motions saying they're training too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem in a lot of places. So, you know what, I think it's just one of those things. You know, did it suck? Certainly. But, you know, Joe was trying to get better.
Right.
So I want to talk about your background a little bit. Kind of give us the background of your working with James Harrison, you know, because he's a guy that I know before you started here that you trained. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of somebody that you helped. I mean, we talk about helping Terrell Suggs later in his career. James Harrison was the same kind of a player.
It's the poster boy for that. Yeah. Was he 39?
Yeah.
What, 49?
James for a long time. I mean, when I first started really working with a lot of pro athletes back in like 99, early 2000s, based on where I lived geographically, I started getting some clients from the Eagles, Ravens, and Steelers. Were primarily where most of my guys came from. And then I ended up opening a facility in Pittsburgh and opening up a facility in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, because I had so many Eagles clients. So, you know, for a couple years there, I also traveled with my Steelers clients. Hey, they'd work out of my place during the week. I would travel with them to home and away games, work on them, do some recovery stuff the night before, the morning before. And I just had a really good group of guys. And I got James really early in his career. And James, again, along the lines of an Eric Weddle, is just such a disciplined human being as far as being coachable, doing what's asked, and working hard. You know, the ramp of James from starting at a relatively young age and just building every year on top of that. I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all to know that he's still playing.
Right. When you have a guy like that who is a former Defensive Player of the Year who is playing at an incredibly high level, late in his career. I mean, you just look at him, and he just physically looks like one of the most intimidating guys in the NFL. And I'm guessing that people come to him and say, what are you doing? Because I want to get in on that. I mean, mm-hmm. when you have a guy excel at the level that he did that's part of your program, is that huge for you? And then other players calling you and say, okay, I want to get on that program.
Oh, too. It definitely was. I mean, James would – I would work with 20, 25 Steelers players at a time. You know, same thing with a lot of the Eagles players. So – guys, when they see somebody getting results, they're like, well, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. You know, now James, it's, you know, smart enough to realize, and some guys aren't, that doesn't happen overnight. If James says, well, what'd you do to be able to do this and still play at age 39, James can say, I've been taking care of myself for 17 years already. You know, this just wasn't a one season thing, or, hey, I'm in a contract year, I'm going to work real hard. He's been committed to this and disciplined to this for almost his whole career. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all credit to him. It's really just a testament to really taking care of yourself and working hard and really how long you can play.
Right. He's kind of known for like his wild feats in the weight room. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen him do?
I think that I've seen him come in and just doing like a high plyo jump in jeans where guys are already working out and he just came in to talk. And would just sort of stare at the box, and all of a sudden, in jeans, jump up, get up there. And in my Pittsburgh facility one time, NFL linebacker was in there, and he was doing like a rack press, a bench press, like 385. And James came in, street clothes, and he's just looking at the weight, sort of looking. And this other guy was doing it for like three. Uh-huh. James, you know, got under the bar. He's just sort of looking around. All of a sudden, he reps out 16 of them.
Oh, my God.
I thought the other guy was going to retire on the spot. You know, because it was just so easy for him and to do it cold. And James is, you know, sort of quiet guy at that point, and he just liked doing that needling without saying anything. You know? Just making a statement, oh, is this heavy for you? You know?
So I heard that you kind of have, like, a morning crew also of non-players, like, like Ravens staffers. There's, you know, coaches. Word is circled around in coaches, right? That like, you know, there's this crew. I thankfully was never part of that crew because I would have died. But I've heard that Coach Harbaugh is one of your kind of converts, that you converted him to the program.
I got to tell you, he is probably the hardest worker in the building. I mean, I torture him. I experiment on him. You know, do stuff that I'm going to do to the players with him. And he's just a worry about it. And he's, again, we talk about discipline, structure, guys. I mean, he's that guy. You know, he doesn't miss. There's no excuses. He pushes himself hard every day. I mean, it's amazing.
It's interesting. He is one of the more jacked NFL coaches. Yeah. You see a lot of flabby NFL coaches.
Yeah, he's a
great coach. Long hours, unhealthy eating maybe. Harbs keeps himself in good shape.
He does. He's so disciplined, and he works so hard. And it's really been beneficial, you know, for me coming in from the outside. And it's one thing to explain to him what I wanted to do. It's a whole other thing to be able to show him.
Right.
I mean, John's very educated on what we do and the why, probably more so than some of the players, you know, just because he's doing it year-round with me all the time. So it's fantastic. I mean, if he was a coach that never stepped in the weight room, I probably wouldn't have the job. You know, they would really have no idea what we did now versus what was done before because they didn't do it.
Right.
Well, I guess me and Ryan are going to have to get in on this early morning group next time. We'll be there soon. Just hold a spot for us.
You guys are always welcome. Come on in.
Cool.
Right.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much, Steve.
My pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Well, good stuff from Steve. Clearly, he knows that I can put up more weight than you, but didn't want to embarrass you on the podcast.
You know, as we were walking in, I walked down from the weight room with Steve, where I spent a lot of time, and he says to me, does Mink still work here? Because I haven't seen him in the weight room in... Years. I was shocked when he came down here to the weight room because I haven't seen him in here in a long time. I thought he left.
I don't work out here.
You don't work out anywhere. You don't work out here. You don't work out there. You don't work out anywhere.
I don't want to embarrass the players
by
how much weight I put up, okay? Because it's not a good look when your staff writer, you know, is just out benching you. So I do it at the Gold's Gym back at home.
Yeah. So you want to talk about embarrassed. There's a lot to be embarrassed about for you in the most recent draft, the serial draft. And so we did this on the most recent episode of the podcast. And as we mentioned before, when we do these drafts, we get more emails about these than anything else. You know, we like to think our football acumen is good, but there's nothing like one of these random drafts. So as always, we love to hear from fans at the lounge at ravens.nfl.net. We won't get into all the emails because there was a lot of them, like I said. And let me just say, there was not a single one that said you won this draft. Not a single person.
Even my own uncle emailed me and said I got destroyed.
There's people that came up to the common man while you were out and said, thank you for being the voice of reason in this building. Thank you for being the voice of reason because that was the worst draft I've ever seen from me.
I'm going to start this off and say it's a bunch of baloney that we don't do a snake draft, okay? Because this is it hinges too much on the rock, paper, scissors. You can't have, this isn't like the NFL where you're trying to create parity in the league, right? So thus, if you have the first pick, you also have the 33rd pick.
It doesn't.
A snake draft makes the most sense.
You took Cookie Crisp with your second pick. It doesn't matter if you would have had a snake draft. You would have taken Cookie Crisp there anyway.
No, it was a terrible pick. I don't think I took Cookie.
A terrible pick.
I took Captain Crunch.
Yeah, but that was your first pick. Your second pick was Cookie Crisp, if you remember.
No, you don't even remember.
I mean, it was
so
bad. My
first pick was Fruity Pebbles.
Cookie
Crisp. Then, sorry.
Yeah,
then Captain Crunch, then Cookie Crisp.
Yeah, anyway, so here's an email. I'll just read a couple of them. This one's from Kyle Barr, and it's a long email, so I'll read a portion of it. He said, I started this email before even finishing it in the last episode that would feature the serial draft. I would like to offer some analogies for this draft, and I think it may be fitting for you. A lot of analogies. My favorite was listening to the draft was like watching any scene from a monster movie where the unsuspecting Mark, Mink, happily digs his own grave before Garrett's monster character puts him in the ground. Now, if you remember, I came to Mink's defense for the pizza draft, and I think that most drafts have been a little bit unfairly slanted against him.
Yes.
But this was just painful to listen to. It's just painful to listen to. It's okay. You can try to bounce back on the next one. Here's another one from Mark Fadai. And the question is, Downing is greater than Mink. Great subject line. On the email, Mink got smoked as usual. Cookie Crisp? Cookie Crisp?
Cookie Crisp is great.
Shouldn't even be on the list. Shame to both of you for not including Apple Jacks.
Mm. Ooh, I do like Apple
Jacks. That is a good one.
That would have been right up my alley. Also, sugary, not healthy.
Also, multiple people emailed us and said, why no Frosted Mini Wheats? I'll just go ahead and set the record straight on this. I said we should include Frosted Mini Wheats. Mink said we also already have, what, Frosted Flakes?
Yes.
Which is a terrible logic. Makes no sense. But that was his logic.
You have to throw a couple curveballs in there, like smacks. That was a curveball.
And the last one I'll read. This is from Daniel Thompson. Hey, guys, love the podcast. I've been listening to you since your very first episode, and I love all your drafts. The cookie draft was by far the biggest blowout. The common man's top four were 100% correct, and Garrett got all four of them. One day, Mink will win a draft. Maybe. Keep up the good work.
Well, the people have spoken, you know, so I will say that.
You'll take me all on this?
Yeah, I think I got to take the L. The people have spoken. Even when family members are telling me I took the L, then it's bad. Mm. So even though my uncle does go out of his way to clown on me. But we'll come up with another draft. I had another idea, but it's escaping me now. But there will be more chances for me to redeem myself.
All right, and we will have our 7-round mock drafts coming out soon.
Maybe that's where I get my vengeance.
And maybe it is. And again, we're working on getting some big name draft analysts in the next week. So thanks for listening, everybody. Email us at thelounge@ravens.nfl.net, and we'll be back with you next week.